The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
To another edition of We the People Radio. We are streaming and chatting live at wethepeopleradio.us. That's a great webpage that we've got up with our great friend Robert. Anything you want to know about today's guests or all of our archive shows from the inception of this show about a year and a half ago can all be found there. Any one of those shows can be emailed out directly to anybody that you know. They're incredibly educational. Everything that you will not hear in the mainstream media, you will find on those shows. No excuse not to spread the word and send that out to everybody that you know. And you are joining Aaron Ryan and Elizabeth Woodward, your hosts of We the People Radio, and Bob Martin. He is our sound engineer and does a fabulous job on our music. Dial into the music, by the way.
Good.
Well, Bob's microphone isn't on.
Bob
can do music, but he's got a little switch problem there.
I can work everybody's microphone except mine. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
That's what Sunday mornings are for.
So if you are tuning in for the very first time, this is a show about fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution. And as we go further down this road, you will find that many things fall under that umbrella.
It's not a show about perfection, however.
Mm-mm.
So it isn't about a perfect world. It isn't about the perfect topics.
Or perfect hosts. See?
Perfect.
I just wanted to do that so that you can see that we are not perfect.
Oh, sure. We planned that. Rehearsed it last night.
We don't rehearse
like everything
anything.
Else.
We've never rehearsed for a second.
We're just not rehearser types, you know?
Nah.
Can you imagine how much time it would take? You know, you actually do a program ahead of time, and then you do it in real life. You'd have to live twice.
I'll never forget our first show. We just both sat down and started yammering, and we've been going ever since.
People are like, oh, yeah, that yammering, that's true. Yeah, at least it didn't turn out like Seinfeld, you know, the show about nothing.
Yeah. We're definitely not about nothing.
I always tell Don Shulman, I'm like, let's do a show about nothing. Wouldn't that be fun?
It would be.
speaking of that, kind of breeze went through my head.
And feel free to give us a call at 530-605-4567. We'd love to hear from you.
And I was thinking that, you know, what the train of thought I lost was... you need to let us know if you want topics.
Yeah.
If you'd like to hear a speaker, you know, every now and then I'm listening to the radio and I hear somebody interviewed, you know, who's written a book or something like that, and, you know, they get a 2-minute soundbite, and I'm thinking, hey, let's have them on.
Mm-hmm.
You can email us, Aaron, E-R-I-N, at wethepeopleradio.us. I kind of keep the calendar. And if you know people who'd like to sponsor the program, Elizabeth, E-L-I-Z-A-B-E-T-H, at wethepeopleradio.us.
Although we do cross over from time to time.
You can email either one of us.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. But definitely, we'd like to hear from you on either front. If you have folks you'd like to hear on the program, if you'd like to sponsor, if you just have questions, you know, if you just want to kind of complain about world affairs, you know, we already know about that.
Yeah.
Send those to your relatives.
And we do try to keep this show on a regional, state, or national level. We try to bring in speakers that talk about things that are pertinent to anybody, no matter where they live.
That's right, because we have Suzanne in South Korea who listens.
Yes.
And, you know, she doesn't care what goes on in Reading.
No, but she does
care a little bit.
She cares about the USA. And this morning we're going to have the National Federation of Independent Business on the phone for about 30 minutes, and they are partnering up with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association to try to defeat our illustrious Governor Brown's tax increase proposal.
Because it's silly.
And
John Kabatek is the gentleman from NFIB. Yes. I thought he had punked us at first because he gave me his direct line and I called it and it was disconnected.
Oh.
But fortunately, he called back.
Great.
Nice. He's like, call me.
Did he do the little phone thing?
That's funny. John, are you in there?
I am.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, I'm feeding my telephone plenty of triple lattes right now to wake up the phone. I think we are all needing some waking up. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
You're probably like in your pajamas, so, you know, you're doing better than we are.
Although I think one of these days we should come in our pajamas.
Not like anyone would know, but...
Just kidding, Carl.
I might turn the cameras on. You never know.
That's we're pretty well caffeinated, John. So what's up with you and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association?
Well, thanks so much for having me. And again, just proud to be here again. You guys run a great show. Love what you do out there. Love what you're doing for both your listeners, but for America. And I think we share many common interests here. You know, NFIB, we are the nation's and the state's leading organization serving Main Street. I mean, we really serve small business owners from Redding all the way down to Southern California, across the nation, about 20,000 in this country. And right now, they're just fed up more than ever before with government's lack of accountability.
Because you guys are really boots on the ground for the small business person.
We really are. We are the voice. We are truly the voice of small business. We've got representatives throughout the state of California. We got a great guy up in Redding in the Shasta area, as you guys know, Rich Young. Rich is just a superstar up in Northern California, and being the voice for NFIB and helping to grow our voice. And we just love working with you guys, because the bigger our voice, the more we can get done.
Absolutely. So NFIB now stands for National Fed Up Independent Businesses.
Very good, Aaron.
I'll call in our president and CEO in about 10 minutes and change in the name and the nameplate.
Yeah, you guys need one of those T-shirts. You know, they scribble it out and put the little carrot above it.
Absolutely.
It's a new marketing campaign. Go for it.
Yes.
So what's Howard Jarvis going to do? You know, how are you guys going to partner up, or what specific things are you guys going to push back on? Because the budget's got a lot of different stuff in it that counts on the tax increase.
Sure. Well, we've worked closely with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association on a number of fronts, and I know you guys have a good dialogue and relationship with them. And, you know, if you think about it, NFIB and Howard Jarvis, we really represent everyday Californians. We represent the majority of those voices out there on Main Street, and homeowners and taxpayers as a whole. And what our groups, the people we represent, are saying collectively is enough is enough. Stop the madness. So as we've seen here in Sacramento, let me just paint the picture of just the budget mess here. This out-of-control spending that our legislature continues to just completely harbor. You know, they're proposing about $24 billion with a B in new and billion dollars in new and higher taxes. Higher sales taxes, income taxes, taxes on small businesses, and our spending has increased, and this would increase our spending almost 26%. And we got together with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association based on what we were hearing from our members collectively, saying enough is enough. We cannot sit on the sidelines and let this madness continue. So we released an open letter to California's business community about a week and a half ago, basically calling upon all business organizations, job creators, business leaders, business owners, and taxpayers to join us in collectively saying no and joining us in opposing any of these new taxes that are being proposed in Sacramento and California. And the bigger our voice, again, I think what we're finding is that more and more people that join our voice in opposing these taxes, the more we'll let people know this is not the right time. It's never the right time to increase costs on Main Street. But especially now, the bigger our voice, the more we can win these battles. But we need to join, because the opposition is bigger than ever. So appreciate being on your show to talk about that.
Now, so what are the demographics of some of these businesses that are jumping on board with this? I mean, because when you think of a small business can be whatever you want to call it. It can be a mom and pop that employ 10 people, 65 people, 6,500. I mean, what do you consider to be a small business?
That's a very good question. You know, the federal definition is fewer than 500. That's a pretty good-sized small business. The California definition is fewer than 100. But the average demographic of a small business owner in California and our membership is about 5 to 7 employees, maybe $350,000 to $400,000 in gross annual revenue, maybe. And, you know, kind of across the board, retail, wholesale, agriculture. We represent a lot of agriculture. But collectively, what they're saying is, you know, in a fragile economic recovery where we're slowly grinding, where people are still out of work and unemployment is still at 11%, They're scared. And what we're hearing from most of our members is uncertainty about what tomorrow will bring, and they're frankly just fed up, and the national fed up independent business owners, they're really just angry about our unaccountability with our government.
And, you know, it just shocks me to still hear from some people who actually believe that the economy is starting to come back. And these have to be people that are either no longer working or they're on some kind of a pension plan. They're not being dramatically impacted by it. But nobody knows what the economy is doing, like a small self-employed person.
And that's the real challenge. You know, we have a number of folks who just, the majority of folks we believe in the Capitol who just are out of touch with Main Street, out of touch with job creators because they've been career politicians. We're very blessed. I mean, but I will say we've, you know, you're very well represented up in your neck of the woods, up in the Northern California area. Senator LaMalfa, Jim Nielsen in the Assembly, others out there, you know, they have a real good sense of what job creation is all about. We just need to get more of those types elected. Unfortunately, they are in the minority right now, and we need to speak up.
Well, with Howard Jarvis, taxpayer, behind something, that always carries a lot of weight. And I think that carries weight across both sides of the aisle because they've really been the advocates for the citizens of California for a long time. They have a very good reputation, and so do you guys. So that's excellent. I'm always reading these articles about people who are saying, well, you know, our schools really need the money, and you know, I heard our senator tell a group something the other day that really struck me. He said, you know, the schools need all this money, but there are tons of schools who have half day off. Like every Friday, they have a half day off. Well, they roll the buses for that, you know, whether it's a short day, a long day, or whatever. So if they did full school days and maybe ended the school year sooner, they would actually save money doing that. But doing half days costs, you know, roughly the same. So there are a lot of things going on that could make a difference besides a tax increase, but none of that seems to be looked at.
Well, and let's take a look at these proposals. You know, you got three tax increase proposals. Clearly, both the governor and labor are proposing, again, over $24 billion in new taxes. But let's keep in mind a few things. First of all, these tax increases do nothing to retire our current debt. You know, Californians should be outraged. Your listeners and all Californians should be outraged because every single one of these three different tax increase proposals includes nothing here anywhere near a reform. None of these include any reform to make government more efficient or more effective, you know, like a reasonable spending limit, a cap on state spending, or even meaningful pension reform. So the taxpayers should be outraged because these are just egregious increases. And even Governor Jerry Brown's own finance department anticipates that California's budget deficit will shrink to $1.9 billion by the year 2015, and yet they're continuing to increase taxes by, the governor wants to increase taxes by $7 billion. Why increase taxes by $7 billion when the deficit is already shrinking year by year? So no reforms attached, the budget deficit is already shrinking. This is just an egregious effort to take our money out of our pockets and spend it wildly. It's government gone wild.
Yeah, because I question right off the bat, why do labor have anything to do with increasing taxes? I mean, why should they? Where do they factor in? I mean, I know where they factor in, but from a layman's point of view, why would labor have anything to do?
I'll play devil's advocate. Pensions.
There you go. Oh, unfunded retirement liabilities. Could that be it?
That might be it. Hey, we can ponder that for 2 minutes while we take the break. We were supposed to take 5 minutes ago when we blew Bob off.
Sorry, Bob.
He shot me the 1 minute sign. I blew him off, and he just went back to, you know, playing around with the board over there. He just gives up. You give up too easy,
Bob. We can break whenever you want.
Or we can just talk endlessly. Hey, so, John, we'll be right back with you. We are listening to the National Fed Up Independent Business Owners out of Sacramento there, and we'll be back with you at We the People Radio. Plug into the website, wethepeopleradio.us, here on the break. You're listening to KCNR 1460.
Making the Democrats scream. says we gotta control inflation, quit spending our money on everything. But this year's tax increase, why, it's the biggest in history. Round and around we go, where we stop, who knows, the American dream.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
Time the bureaucrats run out of money. Well, Congress sucks it to the working man. And I don't think it's one look funny when they take so much of my money and do things with it I don't understand. I don't know why they feel they've got to squeeze us, but I'll tell you just exactly where I stand. I believe that 10% is good enough, Jesus. Well, it ought to be enough for Uncle Sam.
Yikes. Who's that, Bob?
That's Ray Stevens.
10% nice. Is good enough for Jesus.
Ought to be good enough for Uncle Sam.
There you go.
Or Governor Brown.
So we are with John Kabachek. From NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, or National Fed Up Independent Businesses, however you want to look at it. Hey, John, so what...
and we've given you a new theme song, by the way.
Yeah.
I think either of the bumper music that we played, either going out or coming back in, would be excellent theme songs for your new push.
I love it. I love what you guys were saying about Seinfeld. I was thinking about it. I think we've got a legislature that's a Seinfeld legislature. It's a bunch of politicians about nothing.
Making laws about nothing.
Yeah. It's there are some stuff, you know, it's funny. It's one of those things, the more you learn, the more you go, what? You know, we stopped learning about all that government stuff in the eighth grade, and unfortunately, most of us don't know the ins and the outs of what really goes on. And it's not necessarily bad, it's just silly. You know, I mean, like getting rid of the vehicle fleet, you know, sounds good, but
then when you reimburse them for gas,
which they should, I mean, you know, like look at districts like ours, you know, 12 counties and you got a zillion miles to travel, but
it ends up costing more.
It costs a lot more. Just
they made them get rid of their cell phones, but they're probably paying for their own personal cell phones. What do you want to bet? I don't know.
I don't know. I think everybody pays for their own phone, but you know, you look at the kinds of things you're doing with the budget. And one thing I did hear, and I'd like to know what you think about this, John. I had heard it was actually a video clip with one of the members of the legislature, and they were talking about these multiple tax increases. And there was a commentator on there that said that Brown is really mad about multiple tax increases because he feels like if there's more than one on the ballot, none of them will pass.
There are some who have the conventional wisdom that around this town here that that if there are too many tax increase proposals on the ballot, that it'll be somewhat of a circular firing squad, and you know, all of them will perish. That the average voter will say no, no, no if they see too many. I just don't think we're taking that for granted. I think we know the governor is working very vigorously to try and get the other tax increase proponents, both the California Federation of Teachers, which is proposing a $6 billion tax increase on income for the most part, and Molly Munger, whom you may know, a wealthy civil rights attorney, has an $11 billion tax increase, and it's an income tax increase for all but the poorest Californians. And I think what he's really doing is working hard not just to get the business community and others to try and fall in line with him, but to try and get these two other proponents to fall in line with his proposal, which is an increase of the sales tax by 0.5 cents and an increase in the income tax rates by 1%. But we're not taking anything for granted. We just know that if there's 1, 2, or 10 on the ballot, people will work hard to try and communicate how they can that this is a good thing. We just need to get that voice heard out there that tax increases make no sense when the deficit is shrinking. There's no reforms attached to any of these. And frankly, when we've had broken promise time and again for any meaningful reform in the past. So
I love it when they say they're temporary.
Yeah. It's just temporary. Temporary until we hit the next speed bump. Well, do you know what the exodus rate is right now?
We know it's very difficult to. Are you asking about business?
Yeah, sure. Business or, you know, just regular people who are fleeing the state. I know that if somebody is in business for themselves here, and you're looking at the health care law show up, and you're look, you know, potentially and the pieces of that that are coming on board, and you're looking at Brown levying taxes, and you're looking at the regulation, it's got to be daunting.
It's outrageous. It's very difficult to track businesses that are actually leaving California, just believe it or not. It's very tough. What we there is a guy, a relocation expert, a guy that we've listened to actually in the past, Dan Logue, Assemblyman Dan Logue, has actually brought him in to meet with some business folks here in Sacramento, a guy named Joe Vranich, and he is a business relocation expert.
Mm.
And what he has found is year to year, the increase, the rate of businesses choosing to disinvest is the word he used, disinvest from California, not expand their businesses, but completely disinvest from California, is rapidly increasing to where I think it used to be about, I think 3 years ago it was maybe about a total of about 50 businesses disinvesting. Today it's about 6 to 8 businesses that are disinvesting a week versus 50 a year. So I will say it's anywhere between 8, I think anywhere between 6 and 10 a week. So we are seeing a rate of businesses disinvesting increasing, and that's just scary. It's just scary.
Now, how do the Senate district lines being redrawn affect these tax increases or these potential proposals?
Well, we're still trying to get our arms around understanding the lines. I think what we have grave concerns that the redrawing of these lines is clearly going to have some impact in terms of a number of more unfriendly proportions for some districts. We're still trying to frankly understand it. It's very complicated. We did support redistricting reform that's fair and appropriate. We're just trying to figure out what's making sense of all this stuff. I think our biggest concern this year from small business is to make sure that we get out there, that your listeners get out there and make sure that they hold every elected official accountable on Election Day. If they've been doing a terrific job, if they've been fighting for you, make sure you continue to support them. But if there's folks out there who haven't, get a bigger voice, walk those precincts, knock on doors, and make sure you get rid of the ones who are not helpful. And go. You know what we also try to tell people is get out there on Main Street, get out there in your community, and find good people who would be great members of the legislature or Congress. They're out there, but sometimes they need a little inspiration.
You know, I'm not saying I'm a fan either way, but I'll never forget when Sarah Palin said, the best people to get into office are the ones that really don't want to.
That's very true. I will tell your listeners also one thing. A lot of folks, you know, you were talking a little earlier, you know, people may get apathetic and really feel like, well, what good is it? It's California. My gosh, we're such an anti-business state. We should tell you, you know, back in 2010, even in an anti-business climate like California, small business was heard. NFIB got very involved. Californians got involved. 17 of the 22 candidates for Congress that we supported at NFIB won on Election Day. 33 of the 36 candidates for the California legislature won on Election Day. 33 of the 36 we supported. So, and then in 2010 when the new Congress took office, 25 new members of Congress were NFIB members. So small business is getting heard. We just need to be louder. I know the more that they can talk to Rich Young up in your neck of the woods, the more they can let NFIB know, the more they can get involved, the more that we're going to make a difference this November. But this is the November we need to get heard.
Give us your contact information if somebody lives outside the Reading area. Was I reading your mind?
Uh-huh.
Elizabeth opened her mouth and then I said it.
That's awesome.
It's a great deal. It's a good thing we don't spend any more time together. It'd be kind of creepy.
It would.
So let folks know how to find you.
You bet. Our website is www.nfib.com. Our telephone number here in Sacramento, the main number is 916-448-9904. And I know Rich Young, who's up there in Reading in Northern Cal, has asked me, he said, hey, give them my cell phone anytime they want to call me. That's great, and I encourage that. And Rich's number up there in Northern Cal is 530-604-4635. But he's ready to help grow our voice. He's ready to talk to small business owners, and he's a great guy. He never sleeps,
and
like
just,
you guys.
And as a reminder, all that information will be on our webpage at wethepeopleradio.us.
Fantastic.
Yeah, what she said. Okay, for those people, John, for those people who are thinking about starting a business, which, I haven't really met a lot of those folks lately, but I know that, the wheels of progress don't ever really grind to a complete stop. Even in Atlas Shrugged, they didn't grind to a complete stop. The people just relocated. But for those people that are looking to start a business, don't mean to do an anti-California commercial here, but where is a great place?
Well, I will say that we still hear about Texas. We still hear about, some of the other states out there. I think Texas is one of the gold standards out there. Nevada's had its share of problems, but I will tell you what we're hearing from a number of the other states, and actually, we've gone and traveled with Assemblyman Logue, Jim Nielsen, LaMalfa, and others. What we're hearing from small business owners that started in California but for whom it's too late and have moved to those states is the following, that from the moment they started their business there, they had elected officials, they had politicians, and they had government knock on the door and ask, how can we help you?
Nice.
How can we support you? And so there's a culture, as one of our staff said recently, and we heard from some small business owners, these other states have a culture of welcome. California has a gotcha mentality.
Oh, they do. Like, they show up on your door and say, what have you done wrong?
Oh, yeah. I know there was a business in Reading. We went up to speak with some small business owners in Reading not too long ago, and a guy who owns a supply store there said that a state government representative from a state department walked in, picked up a chair, said they were taking it out of the business, they were going to go burn it. And he said, are you going to replace it or pay me for it? They said, nope, we're just going to take it, we're going to go burn it, and we want to check the environmental capacity of this chair. And he said, the heck you are. So he contacted his elected officials, I think it was LaMalfa, and they put an end to that,
Yeah, I think that one actually went to Jim Nielsen, and I've heard that story before. It's one of those things where people who don't run a business, say, or people who've been retired for a while, and retired back when the world was kind of making a little bit more sense, they look at you and they go, come on.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
I've heard Indiana and North Dakota are pretty good too.
Yes, I've heard those as well. You can't blame them. I think the other thing we try to remind folks here in California is when a business, let's look at Waste Connections down in Folsom. That left California, and specifically the president of the organization cited taxes and regulations as the reasons they were leaving to go to Texas. But let's not forget that when a bigger business, a larger business, leaves a community, the first casualties in that community are the local dry cleaner, the auto shop, the bakery, the restaurants, and the jobs that go with it. So when we're driving businesses out of any size, Main Street, which creates 99.2% of the businesses and jobs, are the ones that are affected the most.
All right.
And so we just need to put an end to it. These taxes, we encourage your folks to get on our website, actually, to make sure they join with us and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association in saying no. We have an actual form that they can fill out, and it's on our website, and they can contact Rich or us, because the more businesses and taxpayers who can actually sign this form and say, no way, stop taxing us, Spending is up $39 billion over the past 10 years. Highest sales tax, third highest income tax rate, second highest gas tax, and no reforms. Again, no promise for reforms and no track record. We need to be heard now. We're outraged, and we hope everybody else feels that way because we need to be heard.
Okay, John.
Not good. Hey, give us the phone number one more time. Having some requests in the chat room.
You bet, and appreciate that. Thank you so much. Again, up in the Northern Cal area and in your surrounding area of Reading, Richard Young is our superstar representative up there, and he's at 530-604-4635. Our number here in Sacramento is 916-448-9904, and our website is nfib.com. Small
awesome.
Business all the way.
National Fed Up Independent Businesses right there with John Kabatek.
Hey, thanks for checking back in with us. We'll have you on again real soon, and you can keep us updated as we get closer to election time.
D-Day.
I appreciate it, and I'll go keep an eye on this Seinfeld legislature, including all the Kramers that are making their way to the building.
I know exactly which episode you're talking about. I think, you know, we just need to get the soup Nazi down there. You know, no legislation for you. There you go.
I'm liking it.
Well, somebody's computer got sound.
I'm liking this. Thanks for what you're doing.
Elizabeth's feeding back to us at a 7-second delay there with her special computer that still has the sound on. There we go. John, thanks a million zillion.
Bye, John.
All right, thank you. You take care.
All right, folks, we will be back with you in 2 minutes, and if all goes according to Hoyle, we'll have Beverly Ekman on the horn. You're listening to KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee. Smiles in the making. You gotta fight the powers.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
When some loud bragger tries to put me down and says this school is great, I tell him right away, now what's the matter, buddy? Ain't you heard of my school? It's number one in the state.
Hey, hey, take it away! Get
so
that ball and fight!
Your school.
Okay, I want to sing so bad.
If you're not good at singing, don't do it.
Okay.
Oh, you didn't mean that kind of bad.
Words.
You meant you just want to sing.
Oh, I love that song. Bob.
I've never heard that song.
You're distracting us with this great music.
The Beach Boys with Be True to Your School.
Oh.
Kids.
And we're talking about schools and massive indoctrination and how it all starts with our poor, innocent little preschoolers and works its way up. I mean, you know, what little tiny preschooler is going to, you know, at 3 feet tall is going to dispute a, you know, 6-foot state worker taking their lunch away from them?
Especially when they're holding chicken nuggets. You know, I just want to point out a little fact about the program. You know, people have entered the perfect world. You know, we just transitioned out of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Bob has called Beverly Ekman. She's actually on the line. And, you know, we were laughing. We're like, hey, we're cooking with Crisco. It's like, oh, wait a minute. We can't do that anymore, can we?
Yeah, is Crisco against the law?
I think Crisco's against the law.
Is it a petroleum product?
No, that's the other Crisco.
does this give you any clue as to what we talk about off the air?
Oh, Beverly.
Sorry, Beverly.
Bad. Nothing's changed. It's
You're
been
joining
seven days of insanity.
You are joining We the People Radio.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And we're streaming and chatting live at wethepeopleradio.us. And, go find us.
And we have Beverly Ekman, who's going to make sense of how schools get to the point where they take away children's lunches, huh?
Well, don't they, and Beverly, don't they basically just teach them to obey?
Yes. How are
you? Hi. We're back.
It's like we've never been apart.
I know. Yes, they started at a very young age, which, of course, is what all totalitarian systems have tried to do at their inception, you know, before they actually roll in the tank, so to speak. They try to get the children, and this is a tried and true method. I don't care if you call it the young pioneers or the common turn or something else. It's always been a way to get them on your, or thinking your way, to inculcate values that may run counter. honor to parents, which brings up another issue, to keep them away from their parents as much as possible and in school as long as possible and with their peers as much as possible, because they work off of each other, you might say. The peers, especially if you hit popularity real hard, as we have since the late 1950s, we have said, oh, you know, don't do necessarily what your peers do, but actually what we're telling the children every day in the classroom and by putting on all these events and after-school activities that are today nonstop. I mean, it just, you can't even go home for dinner hardly. So is a method of keeping the kids with each other. And that way you kind of cut the parent and the parental values out. That's exactly what the communists did. I mean, the bourgeoisie values then of the parents got cut out of the picture.
And, you know, when you think about it, school officials, teachers, you know, cafeteria workers, bus drivers, they all spend more time with your kids than you as a working parent does. You get off work at 5 o'clock, you know, you come home, you got a couple of kids, maybe three, you're tired, you're stressed, you got to get dinner on the table, they have to do their homework. I mean, you're at a serious disadvantage for real quality time with your children to talk about your values, because all you're trying to do is keep it all together until you start the next morning.
Well, that's true. I mean, in the days when parents, especially mothers, in the 60s and 70s, when they were talked into going back to the workforce and being meaningful in particular and having careers of their own and not just wiping running noses, that all sounded really good until they saw the results of that, until they saw their children coming home as people they didn't even know or recognize. And that's when the fire sort of hit the fan. Then they realized, wait a minute, this isn't working out real well for my kids and by extension for me, because I am at fault if they do anything wrong. And if I can't inculcate my values, then I don't have a chance.
And, you know, you talked last week about the years and years and years and years of training that these folks have gone through to manipulate groups of people and to allow those people to believe that they feel the same way as the trainers. So it's, you know, manipulation, consensus through manipulation.
Right.
And which is what brought us to our discussion today, because you have said that it actually starts in the schools.
I didn't catch that last thing you said.
So you had said that it actually starts in the schools, this ability to reach consensus and a belief system through manipulation.
That's right, exactly. And what you have to do, first of all, and I guess that's where we ought to start today, is how you get rid of, or how you indoctrinate little children. In fact, it works on all groups. It's just, I guess you'd say, easier with children than it is with the adult groups who have some frame of reference. Children have no frame of reference. So what you do is you start out by taking away their base of moral support, and that is, of course, their parents. And you strip away their self-confidence. You sweep away the, they call it the subject support base, his or her intellectual and emotional life raft. And I'll be showing throughout the remainder of the show kind of techniques that you can use to do that. Then you bombard the subject, in this case your child's senses, with a steady diet of conflicting and confusing images and words in order to impair rational thought and discourage reflection. And by reflection, I mean cognition. And cognition means your brain understanding stuff, okay? When you say cognitive information, that's what we're supposed to be transmitting to our children is in school, is really informative, substantive learning. But if they can't think straight, if they are constantly having their senses bombarded with conflicting images and words, then that breaks down. The third thing you do is you lead the subject to the desired ideas, concepts, beliefs, and so on via trained intermediaries, and this can be your facilitators or clinicians. There are many teachers are now spoken of as clinicians, and somehow parents don't get that, but they are, and they're spoken of as change agents, agitators, and then, of course, there's always marketing gimmicks and that kind of a thing that are used also in the classroom, because let's face it, they figure if the marketing gimmicks work on TV, why shouldn't they work in the classroom? So that wouldn't be a real stretch. Then the fourth thing you do is you condition the child through repeated exposure to the desired beliefs. And you can just fill in the blank on what the desired beliefs are using a wide variety of formats and activities, you know, the activities from discussion groups to films to whatever you want to do. Textbooks themselves now, of course, aren't very, they're pretty blatant about what they're promoting. So then you test, survey, or analyze the market figures, if you will, to ascertain whether the new beliefs have been internalized and accepted or not. And if not, you recycle the subject. Now, this is very technical language that I'm using, and I'm taking it from psychology textbooks, and it's applied in the classrooms. When I was a teacher being trained myself, this is the type of fare that educational psychology, which is one of the courses required of anybody going into the teaching profession, that educational psychology and child psychology and, you know, psychology. And those five things are basically how you get kids to accept what they might not on their own. So let's go over them again. You sweep away the subject's emotional support base from their intellectual and emotional life raft. You call parents old-fashioned. You do stuff like that. Bombard the subject or the child's senses with a steady diet of conflicting images and words in order to impair rational thought and discourage him actually thinking about anything. You lead the child to desired ideas, concepts, and beliefs using intermediaries like teachers, of course, but they may be facilitators, change agents, or highly trained agitators. And you use marketing gimmicks, too. Then fourth, you condition the subject through repeated exposure to the desired beliefs using a wide variety of formats and activities, songs, slogans, discussion groups, and I could go on and on. Then finally, you test or survey, and this is very important, number five, because people aren't thinking of tests in the way that I am, because these tests are psychological tests aimed at gearing how much the child has bought in to certain ideas. And I can give you an excellent, you know, I'm going to be giving excellent examples.
Okay,
hold that thought,
Beverly. Bob's going to have us killed.
We're getting the big break sign.
We have to cram in one break and then be off by nine, so we can do news. We've been silly this morning, and that always gets us. Beverly Ekman here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
A vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at millerautotransport.com.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high
Max. Got a little crap in first thing in the morning there.
It's a wonder I can.
I like it when I get to say it.
We have an unbroken streak.
And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none.
Sing it together, folks.
I can read the writing on the wall.
Only if you know the words.
Go to Chrome.
Bob.
Yeah, my niece recently told me she absolutely hates college, and I'm like, you go, girl. I never thought I would say that. I'm like, anymore?
Yeah, but just go be an example. I mean,
yeah.
Stay there and pull some other people out of the out of the rabbit hole, for heaven's sakes.
All the crap I learned in high school, how about all the crap they're learning from kindergarten on up?
Check. All right, Beverly. So it's a it's kind of a cattle ranch mentality there. We cut the kids out of the herd and begin to move them toward the two posts that are close together. Is that about the size of it, Beverly?
Are you there, Beverly?
Yes, I am.
I thought she fell asleep for a moment.
For some reason here.
I was like, oh, our unbroken streak is broken now.
I can turn this up a little bit.
Oh, that'd be cool.
This end.
And we have success.
Okay, let's try that.
Better? Nice.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, so where shall we start? I think the best place to start is with the test, because...
You're reading my mind.
Right, and with the why of the tests that they're doing. Okay, first of all, the tests today are not aimed at significant learning. It's not that type of thing. There's psychology tests basically aimed at seeing what your beliefs are and how much, if you will, propaganda has been absorbed from the schools. And this has, of course, made schooling very, very toxic. And in the process, we're flunking our geniuses and passing our least well-prepared. And that which is, you know, that's how you turn out a person like Napster. Remember the person that started out with Napster?
Mm-hmm.
He flunked and, dropped out of school. And he was a genius at computers. And this is the kind of person we're turning off. And instead, we're keeping the other type, which is not interested in school at all. So it's kind of a difficult situation here. Now, the test, the first time I became aware of what they were doing in testing was in Pennsylvania. And a lady came before her state senator, which was then Arlen Specter, and dumped a whole suitcase full of tests that she wasn't supposed to have in her possession on his desk. And he looks up at her and says, "What's this?" And she says, "These are the tests that our children are taking through the state departments of education, or the education of the division of testing, and which is federally funded through the state. And the money goes through the State Department of Education, which is a state education agency, and trickles down to the local education from there." So in any case, the Fed's money was involved. And with that, she started looking at some of these tests. And I have some examples of the questions for you. For example, there is a group at school called the Midnight Artists. They go around and paint funny sayings on buildings and walls at night. I would join this group when I knew, A, the most popular kids in school were going, were doing this. Two, my parents would ground me if they found out I joined. Got to think about that one. And, the answers went like that, but there was no place to say that I wouldn't join the club.
Interesting little problem there.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. We're up against the news, Beverly. We're coming back to find out about
all
that
right.
test. I encourage people to go to the website and read Beverly's bio. It is awesome. WeThePeopleRadio.us. Be right back with you at KCNR 1460 AM.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hour 2, We the People Radio. Hey, Aaron and I were talking, and Bob.
Oh, don't tell him about
and Bill.
That.
No, I won't go into great detail. But
I don't even know what you're talking about.
You trust me.
It had nothing to do with Crisco.
I'm just messing with you.
You know you trust me. Hey, so we highly recommend anyone out there that has a radio show to have fun, make fun of everything that you can, have some humor. Goes a long way.
Is this the snarkiness pitch?
Uh-huh.
Be snarky. People like it. And if they don't, they'll find another channel.
So we're talking with Beverly Ekman. And you know, she was on with us last week, and she's the author of How to Counter Group Manipulation
Elizabeth.
Tactics.
Yeah, Group Manipulation Tactics.
And Beverly, why don't you plug your books and your website before we get much further along, because sometimes that kind of slips away.
Okay, my website is www, of course, beverlye.com, just B-E-V-E-R-L-Y with an extra E on it, .com. And if you hit Bev's bookshelf tab, all my books will come up. I'm probably using right now in the course of our discussion my, I guess, international award winner, Cloning of the American Mind, Eradicating Morality Through Education, and which kind of was the whistleblower on this whole thing. And then I'm using Walking Targets from 2007, and the one we talked about last week, How to Counter Group Manipulation Tactics. That's kind of an outgrowth of both of these, and I have to keep updating it because there's more and more little tweaks that they give manipulation as they learn what sells and what doesn't. So then there's a new book about to come out that I'm still writing, and it's probably going to be hitting the shelves this summer, called Agenda Games, How Today's High Stakes Political Combat Really Works.
Now, so, last week we had talked a little bit about how they've been, they being environmentalists and primarily the left, how they have been at this for generations. For decades and decades and decades, and they're trained, and they've got their playbook, and we came into the game probably at the bottom of the ninth inning. So
exactly.
Where do we stand?
I think possibly one of the things that happens is that good-hearted people, the general American public, is not. With American, you know, typical values, they really don't get the level of deceptiveness necessary to pull off something like this, and they can't imagine that anybody else would. And that's part of what we're fighting. We're just fighting ourselves in a way, because we can't believe that anybody would use this level of deception and this level of zooming in on kids in particular. The same people that will vote for a leftist candidate in their school board, or not even pay attention to their school board candidates and let them just keep going up the food chain until they hit the presidency or something, are the same people that are now driving their kids to the bus pickup place because they're afraid a bunch of perverts are going to be hanging around.
I mean, when you think about that, that's goofy. The purpose of having them on the school bus is safety, right?
Exactly.
And they're driving, not driving the kid to school so that they could spend more time with their parents. They're driving them to the jump-off point where the child has to do this peer pressure stuff, jockeying for peer pressure until he gets off the school bus and into the school, where he jockeys for more peer pressure. I mean, it's crazy, and we don't see it as a plan. We don't see that as part of the operating procedure here, but it is. And we don't buy in because we can't imagine a school or school policy doing this. So that's part of what we are fighting. And I'm going to give you some more of these questions that are on standardized tests that parents believe are achievement tests or aptitude tests or some kind of standardized substantive test. This one is from the Educational Quality Assessment, or EQA, in Pennsylvania. I often wish I were someone else, or I often get upset easily at home. The student's supposed to check A, very true of me, B, mostly true of me, C, mostly untrue of me, D, very untrue of me. You are asked to sit at a table with retarded students. In this situation, I would feel A, very comfortable, B, comfortable, C, slightly uncomfortable, D, very uncomfortable. And another version of that question is, I'm asked to the house of a person with a religion far different from mine. In this situation, I would feel A, very comfortable, B, comfortable, C, slightly uncomfortable, D, very uncomfortable. A person is in a crowd, is standing on a street corner. They're protesting about something. Some people pick up rocks and start throwing them at windows. I would also throw rocks when I knew, A, there was no chance of getting caught. B, I agreed with what the protesters were protesting about. Or C, my closest friend decided to throw rocks. Now, here's the real interesting thing about this. If you look at this, I mean, after you're through getting mad,
we're not done yet, Beverly. We're still mad.
I know. What do you believe was the preferred? Now, there is a preferred answer in all of these. Not right or wrong exactly, just preferred, and it goes down in the kid's permanent record. What is the preferred answer, do you think, to the person in the crowd standing on a street corner? And they started throwing things at windows. Okay, rocks at windows. So, A, there was no chance of getting caught. B, I agreed with what they were protesting about. Or C, my closest friend decided to throw rocks.
I think they're probably fishing for B.
You're going to go for B?
I think that's probably what they're after, is B.
You're right. Do you know why you voted for B?
I voted for B because they want them to think they're making these decisions on their own, I think.
Okay, they agree with what they're protesting about. They want team players above all else.
Mm-hmm.
Goals are more important than individual goals or parental goals. What they call this is minimum positive attitudes.
Wow.
Now, this comes from the interpretive literature to this test, which you're not supposed to be able to get hold of, but I did. In the ones on the Midnight Artist question, they go around placing funny sayings and scribbling on buildings at night. You know, the answers were, I think, I'm not looking at it right now, but it was A, my best friend decided to throw rocks. B, my parents would ground me if they knew that I joined this group. Or C, I think, I can't remember the other answer, but it, something that they believed that what they were doing was fun. So, what was the answer on that one, you think?
I guess if they're keeping track of the individual answers based on the individual kids.
My best friend decided to throw rocks, or everyone I knew was throwing rocks, that would be a good answer. Those are good answers. Sometimes it's not just one answer.
Group dynamic.
The best answer is the one that shows that they will go along with group goals. Now, here's how it says it in the interpretive literature. I'm reading from the interpretive literature. It tells you exactly what the bases are of the preferred answer.
They want to know, A, what is the child's locus of control? What that means is, where is the child coming from? Is he kind of in charge of himself? Is he really motivated more by what his parents tell him to do, or what the parents say, or the beliefs of their parents? Or is he peer-oriented? That's what they mean by locus. B, is the child externally or intrinsically motivated? In other words, does something have to come in from the outside in order to motivate him, or does he motivate himself? C, is the child amenable to change? Speaks for itself. Will the child conform to group goals? That's number four, and that's what we've been talking about here. And then five, will he comply with authority figures? Now, that last one is a zinger. Because when you read down, you find out who the authority of figures are supposed to be. And guess who those are? Parents?
Teachers?
Teachers? No, peers.
Oh.
Hmm. Yeah. So if a child will comply with authority figures, will they comply with their peers? So now, this is all you need to know to see where we're headed. If this is coming out of places like the Psychological Corporation, and they want to know if kids are going to, who's controlling them, and how to make them be controlled by forces that pre-World War II they would have never considered. I mean, your parents would have said, hey, if Johnny jumps off the cliff, are you going to jump off the cliff too? And your answer would be, well, of course not, Mom. Now, she asks the same question. You say, hey, you know, I just might jump off that cliff. So we've really changed things around. In another test, it's called Testing Essential Learning and Literacy Skills, the TELS test. You know what it said in the foreword? The testing company admitted that it was token academic testing at the primary purpose was to find indicators of gullibility. Almost as an afterthought, the foreword added, the test also appears to measure knowledge to some extent. This is what is being passed off as a cognitive test.
And so you said, let's take a quick break or we'll be all jammed up again. But on the list of things you had given us before, one of the things is who is devising what you refer to as phony baloney tests. I'm just going to make a big leap here and think that these tests might fall into that category. And and so who's devising them and what's the criteria? When we come back, you guys are all going to find out. And so are we. You're listening to WeThePeopleRadio.us here at KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful, a miracle. Oh, it was beautiful, magical. And all the birds in the trees, they'd be singing so happily, oh, joyfully, oh, playfully, watching me. But then they sent me away, teach me how to be sensible.
Your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
Soon we're always starting the same every day. The pledge of allegiance, then someone would pray. Not every kid made the team when they tried. We got disappointed, and that was all right. We turned out all right. It was a different life.
glad that I grew up in the 60s because I can at least say I had some normalcy in my life. Hey, Bob, who was that?
That's Bucky Covington with A Different World. We played that. Played another verse of that a few weeks ago. The we were born to mothers who smoked and drank. And,
oh, that's right. That's right.
We turned out okay.
And we didn't wear bike helmets.
We didn't wear bike helmets.
So Beverly.
Neither did my kids.
Who's devising these tests, and what's the criteria that you're using for these phony balonies?
Okay. Who's doing it, basically, was the, in this case, and it's more since, is the Educational Testing Service. Now, that sounds fine because they started out with doing medical testing, you know, emerging doctors and so on. But they got into this other, about 50 years ago, something like that. And it turns out that the Educational Testing Service is an offshoot of, it's the for-profit arm of the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching. And so they're raking in huge amounts of money from the Educational Testing Service. Now, once they got sort of a black eye from doing some of this, they, Educational Testing Service, started branching out and contracting out, too, to like places like Westat Corporation and Psychological Corporation. And this kept on going until you remove enough third, you know, you go through enough third parties that it's really hard for parents to nail down who's doing it. And that's been part of the reason we're always behind, is because by the time we catch up, hey, our kids have graduated, you know? So that makes it really tough. Now, who's supporting it? You have a national, federally funded organization called the Council of Chief State School Officers, for example. And nothing really, no superintendent makes it to superintendent without this council's blessing. That's one thing. So you have now the National Education Association, and while they purport to represent teachers on in a union sort of situation, they're doing a whole lot more than that. And so is the Association for Supervision and Curriculum Development, which is one of their spinoffs. And it goes on. I mean, I have a page full of interconnections. It's actually about half a page, but once you draw all the interconnections together, Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies has been involved in some of this. So it goes on and on. And so every one of these organizations, and there's, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, about 20 organizations that have fed into this process. And the bottom line is, of course, divided loyalties that lead to socialism. Now, they do not believe in the country that our founding fathers or the framers of our Constitution put up. They didn't think it was sustainable. I mean, clear and simple, they just didn't think it was. And they thought that if capitalism, as we call it, actually that's a pejorative term used by the communists, but we can get into that later. It's not really. It's free market, you know, economic system. But they started throwing around the idea of free market socialism. You'll hear that now and then, and you'll scratch your head, and you'll think, what in the world is
that's
that?
That's an oxymoron.
I know. It's an oxymoron. So, but these are the way the cocktail set that I talked about last week started thinking in the 50s and 60s. And from that, you got a lot of true believers. I think we ought to look right now at some of the things they are trying to instill. In other words, the interpretive literature that I talked about that says, is the child willing to conform to group goals? What is his locus of control? What is his amenability to change? Will he respond to authority figures? And, you know, the new authority figures are the kids. This is the kind of testing is behavioral testing, and it comes under the rubric of psychographics. And so you have to know what psychographics is. It's a market-based psychological a system that tests people and finds out whether they will buy products. I mean, if you have 20 types of coffee sitting on the grocery shelf and you're going to introduce a new brand of coffee, you've got to hire somebody or figure out some way what is going to make your brand of coffee stand out.
Okay, we've got the same thing in education. You are not going to sell the usual type of education anymore. You're going to aim education at attitudes and politically correct attitudes. What's going to make people buy? Same thing. We didn't look at it that way. We didn't get into this soon enough and understand it. So that is basically what psychographics is. And the idea down the road is to be able to predict behavior 10 or 12 years out. In other words, if I push this guy's or little girl's pro-homosexual or pro-abortion or pro-Marxist or pro-socialism, you know, healthcare, national hot button, then if I push that hot button, is this little girl going to bite? Is she going to go for it? And the only way is through psychographic testing. And I can give you a really easy way of showing that particular thing, how it works. But the idea is, with computers now, that we can, by golly, predict. If you're giving out these kinds of tests, say, three separate years during grade school, third grade, eighth grade, third, fifth, and eighth grade. Okay, and then you do it again in high school. And then, you know, you keep on with it, which you do, by the way, longitudinal studies. You even go into college with this stuff, and you use some of the same people. You will have a really good fix on whether you can predict the way a people generally will react in certain demographic areas, certain socioeconomic areas, and finally down to the personal level. For instance, there was something called, for a while, I don't know if it's still there, a gay Billy doll. It was a doll. It was on a shelf. And it was in toy stores. And when you touched it or picked it up, it said, "Are you horny, baby?"
What?
I'm not kidding. I can't make this up. And I may have been two separate dolls. I think one doll said, "Are you horny, baby?" And the other doll was just gay Billy. Okay. Well, in any case, they were made by one manufacturer, and they were on there with all the other toys and dolls. Now, if the sales figures for those dolls go way up and parents think they're cute instead of disgusting, you've got a winner there. Then all your hard work that went into selling this concept paid off. Because in the 1950s, you know what people would have done with those two dolls.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have banned, nobody would have gone to the store. That would have been it for that store. Okay. But if the sales figures are disappointing, then they need to go into the schools and with a more aggressive programs and curriculum that will hit
creepy.
The issues harder. That's what's going on, and it's devious beyond devious. So what are some of the values being transmitted? Well, I got really lucky. At a North Carolina school, one teacher faxed to me the new values that these teachers were supposed to transmit to their kids, and she got it in her school mailbox. You know, they're always getting leaflets about something, and this is what the policy on the school was, or the school district. There is no right or wrong, only conditioned responses. The collective good is more important than the individual. Consensus is more important than principle. Flexibility is more important than accomplishment. Nothing is permanent except change. All ethics are situational. There are no moral absolutes. There are no perpetrators, only victims. How do you like them apples?
It's alarming, and I just Googled the gay Billy doll, and there's quite a bit of information. I just added it, linked to the chat room, but what the heck?
I know.
That's like, okay, wow. You know,
this is very coordinated.
For everybody who had to take those tests when they were growing up, I just want you to know now that there was a reason that we didn't like doing it, and there was a reason that it all seemed like a massive waste of time. Sounds like we should have...
Well, kids like talking about themselves. I mean, at first, from the kid's point of view, hey, this is fun.
Yeah, I guess. Wow. You know, we're going to come back with Beverly Ekman. She is the author of How to Counter Group Manipulation Tactics and a whole bunch of other books. Just happens to be the one I have sitting in front of me. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. Be back in 2 minutes here at the home of Free Fire Media.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Know what to say. Aren't you just kind of sitting here dumbfounded?
Well, we had a little humor during the break, because yeah, we were reading the Wikipedia thing on the Billy Doll. So thanks for that. Thanks for that bad visual, Beverly.
Yeah, we have the village people.
I hope you're happy.
if we buy one of each,
you can Google.
Yeah,
is Ralph Tyler. R-A-L-P-H Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R. He died a few years ago, but he was a mover and shaker on the psychographics thing. Him and Richard B. Wolfe. And that's a real interesting read, too.
I don't know. Your idea of interesting is a little twisted there.
Well, it is interesting that they went from state to state under the rubric of the Commissioner of Education. See, we didn't always have a Department of Education. We had the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. So when it was like that, there was a Commissioner of Education on the education part, Health, Education, and Welfare. And the Commissioner of Education, one of them happened to be Ralph Tyler, and another one was Robert V. Gardner, I believe it was. I have that wrong, the first name, but anyway. And a lot of these other people, Francis Keppel, and they were completely in sync on doing these assessments. They called them assessments because, guess what, they weren't tests, and they could hedge the legal definition of a test by calling this type of testing an assessment. And that was also a huge conflict of interest, because while they were sitting as commissioners of education, they were going around states making contracts to do this under the Educational Testing Service. I mean, it was started as an eight-state thing under the Cooperative Accountability Agreement and its Cooperative Accountability Project, CAP. And then it just morphed into the NAEP and went national. That's the way they always do these things. Get the bugs out at the state level, then it goes national.
Hey, I have a
and
quick...
we got caught. But unfortunately, the parents didn't have the money to keep pursuing, and they weren't organized enough, and so they just steamrolled right over them.
So what happens through these standardized testing when they discover that there's a child that doesn't conform that actually thinks outside the box, picks his answers, picks answers.
What do we do with the rogue wave?
What do they do? I mean, how do they handle?
To a counselor.
Seriously, they do?
Yep, they really do. I had an example of that in Pennsylvania, too. A kid was very bright in math, but he thought for himself. I mean, he was so exceptionally bright, he saw through the whole thing, basically. And his mother told him, he told his mother about these tests, these weird tests that you couldn't study for. And so his mother said, well, next time you get a test like that, call me. And that's the days when you actually could go out of class and call your mother if you had to. And so he did. And he tried to remember as much as he could, had a real good memory, and tried, just a piece of paper that he happened to have on him or was on the floor or something. He wrote as much down as he could think of, and including some codes, little codes that were by some of the questions. And his mother picked up the ball and ran with it. But, a lot of people, she had a whole group with her. And then we realized it was in Michigan, and then we realized it was in Indiana, and it was in a few other states. And so they really tried to do something in the 1989-1990, and it was just a fiasco. I got letters, actually, from some of the senators that were the letters from the local education officials, state education officials, and feds. And they were all blaming each other. They were all pointing to blame. They never thought it would come back to bite them. But the parents then found, and it was very hard to find, the federal funding for this. But it was under a Title IV, I think it was, three or four, and of the Elementary and Secondary Act of 1965. That was bringing in something called resources for improvement. So that means what it was is if the kids in XYZ school district are not buying into this stuff and their answers show that, then they bring in something called resources for improvement. They're curriculums. They're a batch of curriculums. They cover citizenship. They cover, social studies. They don't call it history anymore. They cover reading and other things. And so these actually had the stamp on it for Title IV, and then we had them, because that was federal funding. And also the people that helped start some of these resources for improvement taught the teachers how to present the lesson plans. Half or some part, I might not have been, maybe it was a third, of their salary was, wouldn't matter if it had been 2 cents, but it was paid for out of federal dollars. They traveled to the state and to the local school, Allegheny County in this particular sense, and helped them for a while, get their feet wet, the teacher's feet wet on this, and then they went back home. Then they had them there, too, because that's federal salaries. But, by this time, the parents saying, what kind of trouble is my kid going to get into? How much are they going to take out on my kid for his future if we sue? And there were several instances like that we found of, the officials even went so far in one case, and I think this was involving Western Psychiatric Institute and Clinic, because that was where some of the tests were coming out of, to shred the files. When the parents said, I want to see my kids' answers. And they were being told, it's not individually identifiable, but you have to read their definition of individually identifiable. I mean, it's barcoded, it's sticky labeled, it's all these weird ways of doing it. Yes, you can find it. It is individually identifiable. So they asked for to see it as part of their court case, and some of the documents got shredded. And by the time they had won, so-called, their case, it didn't mean anything because they couldn't go national enough. But the whole, the New York Times would pick it up. Some newspapers and some magazines did pick it up. National Review picked it up. There were a few others that picked it up. But Washington Times picked it up. But it wasn't big enough. Just didn't get enough on the ball. That's when everybody should have yanked their kids out of school right then and there. They could not prosecute everybody.
That's always the best thing, is hide in a crowd. We just don't seem to do that very well. There's a there's one thing on your list that you had on here, and I thought, gee, this is probably why you sent us these great questions. People probably have asked them before. But you have on here that, what's the relationship between the data mining, the psychological profiling, through these types of surveys and tests and whatnot, and how does that connect up with the curriculum?
Okay, what happens is that it's all based on prediction. If they want to be able to predict, preferably, how each individual would react down the line, because prediction is even the basis now of many job employment applications. People will tell you, if they bet on a recent job application thing, and then they go down and, you know, have to talk to the people, actually talk, you know, sit down with a discussion type thing, but they're going to be asked all kinds of questions, and some of them are designed to make the person look bad. I mean, you have to look bad no matter how you answer it. And there's been Target got sued over that, the Target store at one point. And there's many others. They're just one among many. Well, the idea is to be able to predict and then get rid of employees. You know, you have a choice, obviously, and you certainly don't want to discriminate along the usual lines, so you discriminate along these lines here, and what you will get is a lot of employees that are mostly liberal. The bureaucracy certainly tries to do that. The federal bureaucracy now, which is why it is almost completely liberal, because they just keep doing this over and over, asking these type of questions. But it starts in schools. That's where they set the bar, you know, get these kids acclimated to the fact that, first of all, you can ask these type of questions. When you and I were little, if somebody came into our living room and said, "Oh, that's a pretty couch. How about you pay for it?" Your parents would have said, "Excuse me?" In fact, you probably would have balked. And now, hey, in the Oprah era, nobody cares. Yeah, who's your daddy? we've acclimated ourselves to being able to. I've seen questionnaires in 17 magazine type things, in Vogue magazines, aimed at Teen Vogue, I think it is, or one of them. They're various tests. They all do it. Send us in your responses to these questions. It's, one of them is, and it's not said in such great language, but I'll put it in nicer language. Do you ever go to the bathroom in the shower? Now,
that is a Seinfeld. That's a Seinfeld episode.
You
remember that one?
Okay, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he probably picked it up from the questionnaires in these magazines. I mean, and these kids, they rip out this thing, they fill it in, they think it's funny, they think it's hilarious, and they send it in, not realizing that the thing is probably barcoded where you rip it out. You can't see it until you break the binding. And, you know, they're going to find out. So they can find out if they want to. Some magazines don't care. They just want to know how many people are reading the magazine. You know, they don't care about the rest of it. But depending on their end game, they do care and they can find out. And so what we're doing here, the idea is to acclimate you. That's number one, is to acclimate you to the fact that personal questions, intimate questions, can be asked. Secondly, that you can report on one another. I've seen one lesson plan that says, "Oh, go home and check out your mother and father's medicine cabinet. Write down everything and let's discuss it in the morning and tell us when, compare notes and discuss what you see."
Wow.
I mean, they're acclimated to think this is okay. They don't even tell their parents about it because they don't see anything wrong with it.
Wow.
And so, you know, you get a call sometime and we're starting a ball rolling that we really don't want to roll. And we could stop it, but we don't. And the argument that allows it to continue is called compelling state interest. Well, it's, for instance, not a compelling state interest, or it didn't used to be, to learn how to read. So they wouldn't talk about, look, say, reading program that doesn't work versus phonics that does work, that has a better chance. Well, a compelling state interest, though, for sex education, oh my, that's very important. The state has a compelling state interest that everybody learns about sex. So
So you see where we're going with this. They can sort of define what has a compelling state interest and what doesn't. So if you knew how to handle it and could, you know, get your a group to go to your state legislator or your school board. I mean, how many people just don't even answer the school board questions or the whoever's running for school board? They don't even bother to see who's running and what their take on things are. If they were to go up to them and say, look, I do not want, and I show them on my website, there's a parental notification letter that everybody could be printing out at the beginning of the year and taking to their superintendent, to the school board member, and the principal. And you file it with a lawyer. It doesn't cost that much to just file with an attorney. All it means is that you have a piece of paper on file. That's about $75 to $125.
Well worth it.
But it's worth it to be on record.
Nice.
And if parents were on record,
see, now that's something that people...
So then when it got really, really hairy and the fire hit the fan, you could actually start making demands.
And that's something that people can do.
You're in a position to make a demand.
Nice. Well, I was going to say, when we come back from the break, we need you to tell people what they can do, but yeah, beat me to it.
That's great.
Your ESP is in overdrive. All right, when we come back, we're going to have about 10 minutes left with Beverly, and hope you stay tuned here. This has been awesome. Thank you. So her website is beverlye.com, actually. Super simple. You can catch us at wethepeopleradio.us. You're listening to KCNR 1460. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes at the home of Free Fire Media.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Not a bad idea.
Can we say the school's been blown to pieces? Isn't that an attack watch situation there?
Attack watch.
Hey, so last few minutes, don't miss out. We've got Charles on the line.
We do indeed have Charles on the line.
Good morning, Charles.
Hit it, Charles.
Good morning. Yeah, I was calling with that same question in mind. What are we? You know, what does the guest suggest that we do to, you know, prevent this, what sounds like they want to turn us, you know, turn the kids into a bunch of, each into a Tovarish Sovietsky, and and the time was going by, and I'm like, somebody's going to ask what we do about this stuff, and then 30 seconds after the call gets through, somebody broaches the question. Yeah, so what do we do about this? What do we do to stop this runaway freight train?
All right, Beverly, it's all you. We've got nothing
okay.
here.
I heard part of his question. I think I got the gist of it. One other thing that we could be doing that would bring the whole house of cards down would be to challenge psychological testing on the ground that a school is a captive setting. You're not allowed... there's a precedent. There's a legal precedent for not being allowed to do anything like that, asking that kind of personal questions in a captive setting where a person can't just get up and leave, and children in particular. So when you have minors that are in a captive setting, then that gives you a little bit of extra oomph there. But you'd have to almost tell you know, your attorney that that's how you want it approached. I did that with somebody in Florida, and they it's written up actually in an article called Uncle Sam's Classroom, which is in my book Walking Targets. I added it. It was published separately as a piece for Chronicles magazine. It was put in there in Walking Targets, and it's called Uncle Sam's Classroom. You would not believe how that case came up. We were not supposed to win it, and we did.
Interesting. And you also had a note here on the list that said that that politicians really don't, how'd that go? They don't address the profiling and the data collection. Why?
No, they don't understand it, first of all. They don't understand the ins and outs of it. For instance, just little things, like that the term confidential, everybody takes to mean anonymous. It is not. Confidential, in a legal sense, means need to know. Who needs to know? Well, maybe nobody, until you start running for public office, or, you know, you want to get to the head of a certain agency, or even become CEO of a certain group, then suddenly you're toast if you have certain opinions. And as for these things following you all their life, there was an article in the Washington Post fairly recently that I alluded to in another one of my articles, can't remember which one now, and it was by Justin Moyer, so it's you could find it online if you just put Justin, J-U-S-T-I-N, Moyer, M-O-Y-E-R, plus Washington Post. He wrote a thing saying how he filled out this little test that was supposed to be just confidential in high school, and it kept following him back. He moved here, he moved there, he moved to all sorts of places, and every time this piece of paper would follow him and try to catch up with him more recently on how are you doing with this and what are you thinking about that, and you know, all kinds of very personal questions about drugs, sex, religion, everything that you can imagine. And he wrote that up, and you know, until then I had never seen it in a left-leaning newspaper, certainly, but now people are beginning to get it, and they don't like it, and they're a little bit afraid because they realize now that, you know, and it comes out, I think it came out of the University of Michigan State U, or University of Michigan, I think it was Michigan State U, was always on the return address of the envelope, even though that's not where he took the original test. He took it in high school. So this goes far. It's called the longitudinal study. But you will see it if you just, he didn't know it was called a longitudinal study. Justin Moyer didn't even understand what he was writing about. He just said how he didn't like this thing always following him everywhere he went, even into his work life.
That's
so
crazy.
This will show where we're headed if we don't get busy and do something about it.
And getting rid of the psychological aspect of the testing, how tough would that be? Are they pretending that that's an educational component?
Yes, they are, but they're using it under the term assessment, and that's where you can get them. An assessment is, well, there's a long definition, and I wrote a piece, I think you can find it on the web, Education's Armageddon. And New American picked it up, but it's elsewhere too. Education's Armageddon by Beverly Eichmann. And I explain how an assessment, and I give all the definitions for assessment, and show how that is not the same as a test. So if they do it by calling it an assessment and people just don't, you know, think about it, I think that means the same thing as a test, but it is not a test, and that's how they're getting away with it.
Good grief. Okay, so charter school, homeschool, all that stuff? Kind of
charter school still paid for with federal dollars, so yes, it's a little better than nothing. And vouchers, the same thing. In the end, you're still getting federal money because, you know, somebody's paying for voucher, to go to the public school. It's got part funding from the feds. You know, you left the public schools go somewhere else, but who picked up the rest? So
It's better than nothing right now, but the best thing that could happen is to have more private schools and just gobs of them. Right now, you've got so much red tape, and the government has made it so difficult to start any business because of all the regulations and everything that people don't want to do it anymore. Corporations are doing it.
Yeah, it's even tough to start a private preschool.
Yeah, that's what you need. Everybody needs to get those kids out of there. I mean, yeah, homeschooling's great. I don't want to, you know, throw a cold water on homeschooling. But, you know, some people are up for it. You know, that's why schools were invented, because not everybody can do that 24, or let's say 8 hours a day, spend 8 hours a day. Even if you're a home, you know, stay-at-home mom, that is a really biggie if you have three kids or more. Back in the olden days, they used to hire governesses to do this.
Oh, that's true. We've had a program for this for a long time. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
I mean,
all right, they're cutting us off, Beverly.
Okay.
We loved having you. You're coming
Thank
back.
You.
We're going to make you come back again on a different day. Stay tuned, everybody. Thanks for listening. This is We the People Radio. You were here with Beverly Ekman today.
Don Shulman is next here at KCNR Shasta Reading.